And welcome to episode 23, the Michael Jordan edition.
Nicely done.
Well, you're the Chicagoan, so
That's right.
Certainly appreciate that. And we're going to weave in a political discussion. So we know in Chicago they vote early and often.
We're the dead vote. They don't vote often. And, you know, it's not quite a zombie. By the way, speaking of which, not just the Michael Jordan edition, the Ryan Sandberg edition.
No. Michael yes. Jordan.
Well, yeah, he comes first.
But. There's no one who comes second. It's the Michael Jordan edition. You don't get two Chicago athletes in one podcast because I said so.
Oh, all right. Well, that's fair.
All right. It's Michael Jordan and nobody else.
For those of you who are listening, you may not have heard, there's a...
We actually do like each other. We do like each other.
We had a minor political event occur in this neck of the woods.
We did. But before we do that, you have to mention, of course, that you are always the friendly neighborhood guy.
I am. I am Dr. Soren Fanning, your friendly neighborhood historian. On this, the Michael Jordan edition of Upon Further Review with the podcast props.
Thank you. And since you took the name or the term friendly neighborhood, I can't be friendly neighborhood communicator. So I'll just be Dr. Anthony Moretti, who teaches in the School of Communications and Information Systems at RMU.
And unlike most weeks, we have standing room only here in the studio.
No, we have talent in the studio.
Well, unlike most weeks. That's true. That's unlike most weeks.
So here's what we're going to do. We are going to take probably a little more than 30 minutes today. Because we were never told how to tell time correctly, I guess.
Well, thankfully, we have no sponsors, so we have no one to answer to.
This is true. Well, we are married, though. We have to answer our wives.
Always.
Always. So what we're going to do is do a roundtable discussion with three of the political leaders on the RMU campus, student political leaders on the RMU campus. We're going to allow the three of them to introduce themselves here in just a minute, but the goal is to get a sense for what exactly the special election in the 18th Congressional District of Pennsylvania meant. And for those who don't follow the news on a regular basis, Connor Lamb, who is the Democrat, appears to have won. He has claimed victory. Rick Saccone, the Republican, has not yet conceded. That doesn't mean he has to. It doesn't just mean to this point he hasn't.
Well, to date, Roy Moore hasn't conceded. So
that's true.
And yet Doug Jones is in the
is
Senate.
In the U.S. Senate. So let's do this. We're going to give our three guests an opportunity to introduce themselves. And then what we will do is go with three or four sort of roundtable-ish like discussion or questions to get the discussion going. And let's go sort of my immediate right down the floor. And Alexis, you go first.
Hello, everyone. My name is Alexis Walker. I am a junior political science major here at RMU and also the vice president of College Thems.
Hi, I'm Samantha Medesi. I am a sophomore economics major here at RMU, and I'm the president of College Republicans.
Hi, all. My name is Celine Sarankoski. I'm a freshman criminal justice major and secretary of College Republicans.
So we've got you know, unlike most of America, we can bring the two parties together.
Well, that's right. By the way, I also noticed. Do you notice how they went? Junior, sophomore, freshman. That was pretty impressive. It's like we planned
we
that.
Planned it.
We planned it. Which means we're also going to keep him for, well, Alexis may go to Washington soon, but we're going to keep
him
around
here.
We have
a senior over here.
We have
all
a senior.
Four class,
that's right.
Classes represented.
The senior is, of course, represented by the voice in our heads, the voice of reason, John Rowland, who is the producer extraordinaire, who, because of all the people we have today in this studio, does not have a microphone.
Sorry, not sorry.
There, thank you very much. All right, so as we said, let's begin with sort of the big ticket questions to get the conversation going. Start with Alexis, work our way down the table here. First question is, if I am a non-political junkie, why should I care about what happened last night?
I feel like with any election, it's always good to care, just because this is ultimately, we want these people to be our voice in Washington and make some sort of a difference within the communities. Whether you pay too much of a close attention or not, this election was very special because of the fact that we had a Democrat in office who resigned and we need someone to replace him. Now the fact that we have someone who is still representing the Democratic Party and able to continue our representation, it's really miraculous because this is a pretty red area.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to pull through at the very end, guys. So,
all right. Samantha, why should I care?
I think it's important to care about every election as well. I mean, your U.S. congressman is someone who's representing you at a federal level and voting on legislation that's going to directly influence you. I think last night was very interesting because this district has had a Republican congressman for the past several terms. He's ran unopposed several times. So it was very interesting for us to be able to participate in an election where we had more than one choice. And although I am disappointed with the outcome, I'm glad to see that so many voters turned out.
Celine, why should I care if I'm not a political junkie?
I think I could speak for the rest of the people here, especially the college-age demographic of, you know, the many grievances we have, and that central grievance being that millennials don't have enough of a voice and millennials aren't being listened to enough, especially in the political climate nationally. Speaking in even broader terms, millennials want to be listened to. Millennials are walking out today of schools right now to protest an issue that they feel very passionate about. So if they have that mindfulness to be able to articulate what they want and what they want reformed and the differences they want in the people, you know, holding power over them, I think you have a moral obligation to carry concern for any election that will be determining how you live in the future.
Fair enough. Oh, one thing I'm going to have just sort of the, you know, from my perch over here, I'm going to go a little counterintuitive. I'm not going to talk about why so much it matters because, let's be honest, unless you live in the PA 18th district, it doesn't really matter. I mean, okay, one House seat has flipped, so now it effectively means nothing because Mr. Lamb, who looks like he's going to represent the PA 18th, is going to have to run for re-election in November anyway. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, it's almost like a temp position. Well, I mean, it is. I mean, whoever won this is basically a temp. But I took a different takeaway here, and I'd like to get your reactions to this. I'm going to make the argument that Mr. Saccone couldn't close the deal on a seat that President Trump carried by 20 points in the presidential year. Because in one key way, I think he was much more too conservative for the district. And that was this. Say what you will about Tim Murphy. He was a staunch supporter of union rights. He got union endorsements every single time he ran. My colleague in social sciences, our urban historian, Dr. John McCarthy, pointed this out. Saccone ran anti-union. Lamb got the union endorsements and wound up making those up that 19 or so, whatever it was, percentage points. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to ask the three of you, how much do you think that sort of domestic economic issue resonated? Or was this about, in your view, from your perch as young Americans, as you say, representing the millennial generation, was that even on your radar?
Well, me not being from this area and seeing how truly enrooted the people are to like unions and how much it really means to the people, I think it's an issue that is very much important. And Lamb, he took time to really connect to the union workers and attended different meetings. Like I remember like a week or so ago, I was at a youth rally meeting and he left because he had union workers waiting for him upstairs. So that just shows how much of a time and commitment that he was putting in to really connect to the people that he's going to ultimately be representing.
I honestly, as a college student, I haven't been paying attention too much to unions. I mean, I'm not really thinking about that yet. So my vote wasn't necessarily based on the union endorsement. And I think a lot of younger voters will feel the same way. However, I do agree with you that Rick Saccone was not able to pull in that vote. And it's unfortunate. I think that if he would have strategically campaigned more like Tim Murphy, he would have been able to pull it off.
I agree with Sam and the, you know, contention that college students, at least speaking for our demographic, aren't really concerned with unions right now. I think sociopolitically speaking, Lamb was not your typical establishmentarian Democrat. And I think he pulled in a lot of the moderate conservative votes simply because he was a veteran. He was pro-Second Amendment. And he is kind of leading the way for this shift away from polarization that is bothering so many American citizens about politicians, how partisan and far left or far right we are. And I think that initiation he's pulled in to win this election, taking that route, can set the bar for, you know, Democrats to be improving in their numbers in the House.
You said something, Celine, that was actually going to be my follow-up question, or going to be my third question overall, second that I was going to ask. So I want to go ahead and pick up.
He's keeping score, for God's sake.
Yes, it's two questions for me. One, no. You talked about this idea of the sort of non-traditional candidate.
Yes.
Donald Trump, whether you're for him or against him, Donald Trump has taken the idea of the traditional candidate and thrown it out the window.
Yes, completely. Yes.
And Soren and I are both old enough to remember the mid-1990s when this idea of the year of the woman as the outsider was right. The big deal then, and several women were elected, especially to the Senate for the first time.
Well, that's back in the days, remember, when you had liberal Republicans
and conservative Democrats.
Right.
Exactly. And Patty Murphy from Washington State is one of those examples. So my question now to the three of you, and I'll let Celine start off first if there's more she wants to add on this idea. Are we looking potentially at a trend, maybe not necessarily in 2018, but certainly in 2020 and beyond, where the sort of traditional politician, law school, House, State House, governor, et cetera, are we looking at that sort of traditional path to long-term political office and public service, or is it possible we're starting to rewrite or write a new book?
Okay, so my take on kind of what you just described is, to me, it looks like two different forms of a sway away from tradition. I think there's one of personality and identity, and I think Trump kind of took that mold a little more. I think Connor Lamb swayed in the way of actual policy and his views. Trump was known for his audacity and his willingness to say whatever was on his mind.
I thought Barack Obama was the audacity guy.
but I think there's two different forms of, walking away from the mold. I don't think Connor Lamb is the same sort of outsider as Trump is. Even if they were a part of the same party, they differ in the way that they differ, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Connor Lamb kind of differs in a more professional way, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. It could point to his maturity or his, lack of amount of genuineness. But however you want to look at it, I think there is certainly going to be a shift in, what we know as the Republican Party and what we know as the Democrat Party, because people are, I think, frankly, tired of the phoniness. I don't know if the default occupation of people running is going to change, but certainly the staunchness and the level that of, and the personality certainly will.
If we had a television camera in here, we would have seen Samantha's nodding her head vigorously. So I assume Samantha will agree with much of what Celine has said. Why?
Absolutely. I think politics is about to get a whole lot more aggressive.
More aggressive than it has been.
Yes.
I saw yesterday one candidate go up there and actually openly state that his opponent hated America, hated God, and hated Donald Trump.
Yeah. Rhetoric works. In a polarized
environment. I study the Soviet Union. I know this.
Well, no, see, there was a difference there. There was only one political party there. But go ahead.
So I do think it'll be more aggressive. I think candidates are ultimately taking that politically incorrectness and using it to their advantage. And it's not necessarily a bad thing sometimes. Sometimes it's refreshing to hear what the candidate actually thinks with no filter. Would I take that approach? Probably not. But I definitely see that there will be a shift. I also agree with Celine that I think the personalities are changing, the occupations, maybe not so much for right now, but in the future, I definitely hope to see more outsider candidates coming in.
I think we're also at a time where it's like trying to understand what exactly the norm is and how to continue to go about that norm. So when it comes to politics, many people, they're coming in trying to deviate away from what once was the norm to try to make it different and kind of like, especially like with us, like being millennials, we're so like very like rambling and wanting to go out and do more and see all these great different things to prove that we can be the different people. Like we are the voices of the new and upcoming. And politics is definitely going to be that same change. So like Celine did say, I really do think that is a matter of personality. And the fact that we're having more younger people coming into these positions and wanting to do more, they're obviously going to be a lot different than the people from the past because they don't feel like they have to continue to do what they did in order to make themselves known. They feel like they're going to come in and do whatever is going to make them stand out. And by standing out, you have to deviate away from the norm.
Now, it's interesting because as a Gen Xer, which I like to joke that we're the 8-track generation. They didn't make many of us, and they ain't making any more.
Corny.
It's true. Yeah. Okay.
8-track generation.
Do you guys even know what 8-tracks are?
Yes.
Okay.
Records.
Good. Good. Yes.
Good. I feel tested that joke. That's why I felt good about saying it on air. Now you ask my daughter. She looked at me like, what?
She probably doesn't even know what a Walkman is.
So, yes. I remember when I got my first one.
Go on to your next question.
One of my contentions in all this, I'm feverishly trying to actually get onto the question. And I'm very curious about all of your opinions, particularly Celine and Samantha. Not that I don't love your opinions.
Oh boy.
But you're on the inside on this. I've actually maintained we actually have three interest groups in modern politics.
Okay.
You have the Democrats, mm-hmm. the Republicans, and whatever Trump is. So here okay. is my question. The president came here, and essentially, if you read his speech, he tried to make it a referendum on him. I'm not sure if you agree with that or not, but at least to me listening, that seemed to be, hey, you know, vote for Rick Saccone because then I can get done what I need to do. And one of my takeaways, feel free to disagree with me, was in the same way that Obama's coalition never seemed to translate to Democrats when he was not on the ballot, I'm not sure that Trump's coalition translates to Republicans. Is the Republican Party a Trumpian Republican Party, or does the president's, is he sort of this sort of, and now I'm going to have to talk all edumacated, this sort of sui generis, you know, his own thing out there. And the reason I'm more interested in two of you, you represent the College Republicans, so you're closer to the ground on this than I am.
Quite honestly, I forget who the author of this article was, but a political commentator kind of characterized the distinction you're talking about right now as debate club conservatives and cultural conservatives, cultural outspoken people. So he stated that people like Trump and the Republican Party are needed, but not everybody needs to be like Trump. And I think that's really, really important.
Distinction.
I think that's a really, really important thing to address because I don't vow to everything Trump has said, but I'm not so much of a fan of this aggressive, nationalistic, populist mm-hmm. kind of mood he takes on. But at the same time, I think conservatives are a little too politically correct. And I think it's quite hypocritical, actually, of our party to complain about liberals as political correctness when we aren't really as assertive in speaking out. And I think that's why we need millennial Republicans, because we're the ones kind of being loud. It may be, you know, the juvenile in us that's just louder for that reason. But I don't think the conservative party should hold a face of, people in business suits just sitting at a desk arguing about the Trans-Pacific Trade Partnership. How many millennials actually know what that is or know that it is a mm-hmm. thing? I don't think many. And I think
The phrase Rockefeller Republicans popping into my head.
I think as old as Trump is, he really represents the wave of millennial conservatives. And I guess not fully their personality. I don't think he's fully emulating that. I think a lot of people are a lot less obnoxious than he is. But certainly, the audacity that he holds and the boldness that he can have for standing up for what he believes in is something I really admire. And I think it's an example that millennials should follow, but in moderation.
So, all right. I got you. Sam or Alexis, and you, either of you want to add?
Sure. So I couldn't have said it any better than Celine. I voted for Donald Trump proudly, but I am not his biggest fan in the world. I definitely think that he has his faults, and that's okay. I think he does represent the Republican Party. He's very outspoken, and I think his communication style is what leads people to their general dislike of him. So I think if Donald Trump spoke more like, say, Ronald Reagan, if he said the exact same thing in the way that Ronald Reagan would have conveyed it, everyone would love him. I really think that that is his biggest issue. And as for making the election sort of about him, I think he made a huge mistake in doing that. While it definitely brought more attention to it, it also turned a lot of voters away. Mm-hmm. So it turned a lot of, especially Democrat voters, away from voting for Rick Saccone.
Okay. Alexis, do you want to weigh in there?
I think that they all touched based on a lot of things. Okay. One thing that I did want to say is, like being kind of like an outsider per se, looking in onto the Republican Party, I noticed that a lot of people, they tend to cluster all of you all together, like with your like-mindedness. Just because Trump is like this or he acts like this does not mean that you guys have to all be classified with the different isms per se,
right,
that is associated with him.
Thank you for that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. It shouldn't be like that, because at the end of the day, that's not all that the Republican Party stands for by no means, because if that was the case, then it wouldn't be existent.
but it's also convenient to lump everybody in one big...
Absolutely.
Just one big cluster.
Blob.
In all aspects of life, too.
I'd actually use the word lazy.
Well, that's that works, too. All right, so let me try this as to some extent picking up on the thread that the three of you were just talking about. Hypothetical scenario, a leading Republican political analyst or policy planner and a leading Democratic policy planner and politician as well, both fly into Pittsburgh, and the Republicans are meeting with Celine and with Samantha, and the Democrat is meeting with you, Alexis. And they say...
Can I meet with Drew Miller?
If you want to,
I
sure.
I
want to
meet that man.
Fine with me.
It's
okay.
It
and
was not Miller time last
And
time.
We are going to talk about whether Miller handed this election to Lamb as well as our next topic. I haven't forgotten about that one. But they say to you, or they ask the two of you in the Republican case and one of you in the Democratic case, the same question. What positive message do we take from the 18th district special election and spread throughout the country, and what message out of the 18th was clearly a mistake and let's not repeat it in November of 18? And I don't care which one of you wants to go first.
I think the positive is always good to start off.
All right.
Would be that regardless of what happens, you got to keep going, because Lamb was placed into this instance where he did not expect. Like, I mean, he expected to win, but, like, according to different statistical data, it showed that this area was going to be very much red, and he knew what he had out for himself. And he continued to persevere and work really hard to really captivate those voters who were on the edge, some of those voters who did not vote the last time, and the ones who were going to vote for Saccone that decided at the last minute to change. And I think that's something that's very important and something that many politicians should always keep in their mindset when they're trying to get more voters.
Can I just jump in? One thing I saw today that might inform this. Voter turnout in the Pennsylvania 18th last night exceeded voter turnout in the last midterm election. This was for a special election.
It was about 48%.
And that says a lot.
Yep. About 48% of the electorate went to the polls.
216,000, I think, turned
ballpark.
Out in 14.
Yeah.
And 221,000 turned out last time.
Maybe this is like a point that we could put out there. Maybe we should campaign shorter, you know? Like, there wasn't as much long time
there
for people
go.
To get.
Yes. I think we'd all agree that.
I'd like
it
that
wasn't,
one.
It wasn't long enough for people to get so tired. Like, it was just enough to get under their skin. Like, you got to get out and vote.
Oh, some
and
of
to
us
learn.
Were tired.
But it also really got the people out there and motivated, which is something that was good.
All right, then if she's the positive one, that unfortunately makes you two the negative ones. For now, you'll be the positive ones next time. For the next question, what is the message coming out of the 18th that either party or both parties should put in the trash can and proverbially burn and not ever see the light of day again?
I'd say the elderly, quite honestly, because not as if
you
want to
throw
just...
the elder. No, not throw them.
Soylent Green, I know that was wrongly worded.
Oh, well. I know what you're saying. Go ahead. No, I was just giving you a bad time.
So I think the characteristic thing, at least the most commonly that I've heard about, I'm the 18th District of Pennsylvania, although I'm not from here, is old voters.
There is
older
a lot of
people.
Them.
There is an older generation here, and you shouldn't. No one should deny demographics because they're certainly there, and you know the facts are there, and the falsities are there as well. But that in no way means you should just ignore any other young person in the 18th district,
right?
Because although it seems young people are not out voting as much as they should, obviously, they are still. And I think you should account for everyone. No one should be forgotten on your radar of who to target, because once you kind of start a habit of excluding people indirectly, there's going to be voter resentment that arises. And just a deviation from a party that does that. I would never want to be undermined. I would never want to be ignored. So it's good to address the elephant in the room of, yes, there's a lot of older people in the PA 18th district.
The elephant in the room.
Here you go. Here you go. But this that does not mean at all that there aren't any younger people voting. And I think that was one of the biggest mistakes the Republican Party made during this election.
Samantha, what do you think? Anything from this election for either party? It doesn't have to necessarily be the Republican Party that you say should either definitely be used again later this year or should be thrown out and never seen again.
So during the first debate, something that really stuck out to me between the two candidates was the comment that was the first time they were meeting. And this was so far into their campaign. I mean, it was cutting it close to Election Day.
Mm-hmm.
And they had never met in person, yet they had each bashed each other in their commercials, their tweets, their Facebook posts, their Facebook ads. But they had never met each other. And that frustrated me to no end. And I think that every candidate should be required to meet with their opponents and discuss their ideas so that, you know, maybe it won't be so divided in the end. So I definitely think that needs to be implemented in the future.
Before you get the next question, just a reminder, you are listening to episode 23 of Upon Further Review, the Michael Jordan Honorable Edition of the podcast Profs.
Stephen Hawking?
All right. Yes. And on a serious note. And on a serious note,
yikes.
Stephen Hawking, who will be maybe the mind of this generation, sadly passed away late last night, Eastern time. And within hours of National Pi Day, which is there's sort of
it's both very sad and very appropriate.
Yeah, in a way. But as you have heard, there are obviously three voices that you don't normally hear with this podcast, which is a good thing. Give them a chance one more time to introduce themselves individually, and then Soren, you get the next question.
All right. Hello, everyone. My name's Alexis Walker. I'm a junior political science major who's the vice president of the College Democrats here on campus.
Hi, everyone. I'm Samantha Medesi, a sophomore economics major here at Robert Morris, and I'm president of College Republicans.
Hi, everyone. My name is Celine Sarankoski. I'm a freshman criminal justice major and secretary of College Republicans.
I can say one thing with absolute certainty. I feel so good about the generation that's going to take over this country once you and I are in our dotage. And I would like to make it.
Hope so.
This is where I have to do my late night voice. I would like to put a special call out to the millennial generation that when you put me in a home, please make sure it's a good one and not one of the ones featured on 60 Minutes. That's all I ask.
Good night.
You know, I please don't put me in a sweatshop. I'm an extra, not a boomer.
Right now.
Yeah, that's all I ask. But actually, let's do sort of a public service to both parties. And one of the things I would like to point out, we sort of touched on Drew Miller and the Libertarians, which in many ways really illustrates the problem with our current voting system. It's the same problem we have, by the way, in Britain, in France, in virtually every other democracy, where it's that first past the post system. Frankly, the sooner we go to instant runoff voting everywhere, the better. I think more parties are better parties. But for the three of you, since the media, and I mean conservative media, liberal media, neither media, public media, whatever it is, loves talking about millennials without actually talking to them. And the people the kids of Parkland are now finding out that apparently they'll do the exact same thing to post-millennials. I would like to actually pitch this to you as a chance to talk to both parties, because this podcast has an audience of tens that maybe you can...
It's better than zeros is.
That's right. So we're hoping to like double our audience at this point. So five more people, we need you to tune in. If you could talk to both parties, what do they need to talk to people like you? Now, let's face it, southwestern Pennsylvania in some ways is the ultimate swing area, both urban and rural, neither super left nor super right. The millennial generation, by the way, you mentioned that, Sam, you mentioned that young people tend not to vote. I would like to point out that millennials vote in higher percentages than any 18 to 30 generation we've ever kept records on.
Good for us.
So you guys are effectively running the country now and will for the next 50 years. So just all I ask is learn the lessons of previous generations and don't repeat them.
Now learn the lesson of our generations and don't repeat them.
We never held power. What are you talking about?
Our generation did, and not very well.
So this is the question. If you could talk directly to the leaders of both parties, how should these parties, I don't mean pitch themselves to your generation.
Oh, okay.
How should both parties talk to your generation, engage your generation? What are the issues they need to actually have, not soundbite wars, but actual discussions about?
Well, I think their parents and really being there is the easiest way to connect to the millennials. Like, we can't sit behind some TV screen like some of the elderly people and be super content with watching a debate.
She just called us elderly.
We want you guys to come. Like, hold a rally. Get us fired up. Like, we need to see your energy and your charisma. We need to see that personality to really get us drawn in.
I would like to point out that Howard Dean tried that and it didn't work well.
It was a scream. Let her finish.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
No,
wow.
I'm just being wrong, guys?
So we need like these people to really do something like than just say, I'm gonna do this for education. I'm gonna make education free. All right, give us a plan of what you really wanna do so that way we can afford our education. So that way we know that what we're going to school for is really gonna be some sort of substance when we get out, and we're not gonna be crying in debt for the rest of our single lives. Also, do something about this drug addiction. Like, we know that it's crazy, but implement more programs to help the younger people, to help the people who are middle age, to really make sure that they're not going back. Find more jobs for them. Come up with like job care programs. All of these things that everyone is continuing to say that they're doing, but nothing has been fixed.
Okay.
I think it's very strategic to not campaign with millennials. It's really unfortunate. I wish that more politicians, campaigned to us. But I agree with Alexis, just being present and, the first step is just talking to us. I feel like we are often just brushed aside by political candidates, which is really unfortunate. I never miss an election. I love voting.
All of us. I think... Every since I turned 18, every election.
Right. But the rallies are always great. I feel like if there were even just some issues that are important to millennials that would be addressed at them, that would be more effective. However, it is true that millennials do turn out in lower numbers. So I understand why politicians target their campaigns towards older voters.
Continuing what Sam was saying, I think the lack of turnout is, a precise result of us not being involved. We're yes. constantly told what we want instead of being asked what we want. And I think if we're talking in terms of strategy and smart strategy at that, you would probably want to push for the concerns of the people who are going to be voting in, the people who are going to be in the future an age demographic that does turn out the most, to plan ahead. I mean, it may not look super glamorous and like a giant contributor right now, but to plan for the future of the people who are going to be voting in higher numbers when we make families of our own and start to worry about more things than just college debt. We're going mm-hmm. to have children. We're going to have elderly parents to take care of. So I really wanted to emphasize what Alexa said about the opioid epidemic. I think it's something that shouldn't – calling it a national emergency and identifying the problem is it means nothing if you're not taking any steps towards fixing it.
Mm-hmm.
Trump calling it a national emergency I thought was a smart plan, but I'm severely disappointed in the steps he has taken after that fact, because mm-hmm. we know there's people shooting up in public libraries. We know there's needles on the ground. We know there's kids stepping on fentanyl laced areas and dying. Okay, that's a problem, and it's a problem affecting our demographic. So I think that is a very key thing, especially social issues too. Like I said, debate club conservatives speaking about the Trans-Pacific Trade Partnership. No one knows what that is. People want to hear about, the transgender issue right now. That's a hot button issue. Mm-hmm. Abortion is still a hot button issue, as it has been. And millennials are pretty split on it right now. As much as, you know, one side wants to say more people are pro-choice and pro-life or vice versa, it's pretty split right now. Millennials aren't just sheep who are following in the intellectual footsteps of their parents anymore, because we've been called out for that before.
Mm-hmm.
We are developing our own opinions, and for us to just be pushed aside because we are not turning out as much yet, why don't you look at the reason we're not turning out as much? Mm-hmm.
I like that yet.
Yet.
Are you able to steal the microphone?
Yeah, go ahead, John. Go ahead.
So this will probably be the one thing I have to say the whole podcast, but I think that the one thing that Celine started to touch on but didn't get too deep into is I think what a lot of millennials want to see is the end of the rhetoric wars and the beginning of the fact wars. Because there's so many debates that happen that probably shouldn't, because a side will take facts that support their issue but toss all the others aside, mm-hmm. no matter how condemning it might be to what they believe. There are things that are undoubtedly, you can't really fact justify them either way, like pro-life, pro-choice. I understand that that'll be a debate that probably boils down indefinitely, but for something such as like the opioid epidemic, where we have actual facts and statistics on it, the approaches are kind of minimalist because they're trying to stick as close to the values of the party and not the values of the people they're supposed to be supporting.
Very good. Yes.
But
yes.
That's my only input, so I'm just going to toss it back.
So, now they've got, they're creating, roll in 2018 for Congress posters, as we know. Well, maybe they are. Who knows?
I hope not.
I feel like if there was enough conversations like this amongst both parties, then maybe our legislators could get more done. Like, mm-hmm. it doesn't always have to be, like you said, these rhetoric wars. It can be just simple conversations, jotting down ideas to really give the people what they want. It's millennials speaking on issues, going out and doing forth, you know?
Your, collectively, when I say your generation, fairly or unfairly right now, is being defined by the protests after the shootings in Parkland. So a question for the three of you, independent of your feelings on the Second Amendment, if it's possible to do that, independent of, again, why you know those students are protesting, as you look at those folks who are a year older than you, 2 years older than, or younger than you, I mean, what are you thinking? And again, separate the issue, if it's possible, from your sentiments. Do you look at those high school students and think, this is great? Or do you look at those high school students and think, ooh, I hope they're not being used for somebody else's agenda? Or maybe both.
I think it's a double-edged sword, in my opinion. I applaud anybody, and I think as someone who is really involved in politics, I think I'm obligated to appreciate anybody, whether they're pushing for an agenda that I personally can't stand. Mm-hmm. I think they're worthy of appreciation because they are going out and doing something. I just went to the March for Life in January. There were 10 protesters there, and you know, I appreciated them being there as much as I disagreed with what they stood for.
Mm-hmm.
Sam went with me and we saw them, but deep down in your heart, you have to appreciate the passion that they have because it is the same level of passion you have because you are both out there representing something that your will for this culture. So I don't want to get into, you know, the conspiracies behind these David Hogg and his fellow students and mm-hmm. How they're being pre-scripted on CNN. I don't think that should be representative of, you know, the ordinary high schools who are chanting mm-hmm. never again, never again. At the same time, I fear that they're not as informed as they should be because, especially in the high school setting, people just kind of want to be with their friends. I mean, that's something that everybody can concede. But at the same time, I appreciate the passion because everybody knows not everybody agrees with them, and they know that too. So for them to go out there and to represent something that they want to happen, I appreciate. I may not agree mm-hmm. with what they want to happen, but I certainly think that's the first step in not being ignored anymore. So,
sure. Samantha, when you look at them, do you think this is great or, I fear they're being used a little bit?
So on the surface, I think it's great that they're standing up for an issue they believe in. As always, I love when people are speaking up and going out to really advocate for an issue. Independent of my views of the Second Amendment, I would say that I personally would not walk out. I have seen other proposals. I don't know if any of you have seen this, but it's walk up, not
mm-hmm.
out.
Mm-hmm.
These are the same students that are in schools excluding other students, making them feel left out. If they would just walk up to someone and speak with them and make them feel included. You know, I'm not trying to say this is all a mental health issue. I mean, there are many, many problems that go into the gun violence in schools.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that that would be a better step. And like Celine said, these are high school students. A lot of them are largely uninformed about the issues. I mean, I know I was in high school.
Right.
And I don't think that a lot of people will be taking them as seriously as they would like to see people listening because they are high school students. They're non-voters. You know, they're not out there really electing the people that are going to be able to ultimately make the difference.
Alexis, what do you think?
I, like you all, commend these students for stepping up and taking the initiative to speak out and do something that they felt should be changed. Their voices, too, do need to be heard. But at the same time, this isn't an issue that's been ongoing, and we do need some sort of, like, control or regulation for it. So that way these innocent children can stop, like, fighting and losing their lives or whatever's going on in their schools. I do agree with you that they should, you know, step up and make the other ones feel more inclusive because that is the big problem as well. A lot of what's going on is because the children who are looking for some sort of mental stability, they felt the only way escaping that is if they took larger actions. Mm-hmm. And again, we're not always okay with the outcome, but I do believe that something needs to be done, whether it's at a lower level within their state or at some sort of like national regulated level for everyone.
So in that case, as we wrap this up, and by the way, I would like all the Sunday morning political shows to please listen and take note because this is how you get a discussion going. This has been spectacular.
Want to come back next Wednesday? Do it again.
Yeah.
Honestly,
yeah.
She said yes. Her face said no.
No. Yeah. Both says yes.
Celine is great.
Name, you know, upon further review with the podcast profs and the student politicians.
Well, you know what?
Look at us.
There you go.
Look at us.
I think at the very least, you guys have to come back in November.
Walker
absolutely.
For
yeah. But for a final question,
RMU Congress, guys.
An RMU Congress. Point of order. No. But I'm going to make this one
faculty advisors
a little bit faster. And Sam, actually, you haven't had a chance to go first yet, so we'll give you the pole position on this.
Oh boy, pressure's on.
So, I'm going to ask you. We're going to play make believe for a moment, but I think it's important.
Okay.
If you could implement one change, like for a moment, you don't have to worry about a majority in Congress, you don't have to worry about a president, you don't even have to worry about a Supreme Court. But realistically, if you could make but only one permanent change, one policy, whatever it is, to be implemented in the country.
Oh, jeez.
I know I went with an easy one, and I'm kind of filibustering to give you time to think about it. If you don't want to go first, you feel free to pass. So, you want to go first, Celine?
Do I want to go first? Do you know what yours is going to be?
Sort of, but I feel like you have a way more developed opinion.
I don't like this question.
This is going to get controversial really fast.
That's okay.
You got one shot for like sort of the magic power up in Mario Brothers, you know, to get this done. What would it be?
I would overturn Roe v. Wade. That would be my one change.
Right. Okay. Ms. Walker. Okay. All right. Sam.
Sam's turn.
All right. So I was actually going to say that one, but now I won't.
You could say the same thing.
That's okay.
If
that's your issue,
you only get one. So if that's honestly the most important, say so. If not,
I'm like stressed out.
What would it be?
I don't know.
I definitely do vote on the pro-life issue. If a candidate is pro-choice, I will not vote for that candidate. So I feel like I would definitely choose the same policy. If I would have to choose something different, I think I would implement term limits.
Oh, no, that was no.
Well, you know, the thing is, what we see,
though,
we see sort of a bridge here, you know?
Yes.
One issue, two issues, back to you. Exactly. So for you, Alexis, it's term limits.
Yeah, I talk a little bit about that. Or even like shorter campaign cycles, like I said, it also reduces lots of funds and costs that these politicians don't have or are trying to recruit from other people. Okay, something that I would really like to see different would be maybe like room for more minorities and more women. Like something, not really to like mandate it, but let it be known that we too can do this without so much backlash afterwards. Like people shouldn't have to look at us differently because of the color of our skin or whatever gender that we associate with. And I would really like to see that all across politics, whether it be at state level or federal level.
I think that's a very, very profound thing. I think identity politics are, I call it intellectual racism, just putting people
into
thought groups and thinking, right. You know.
It's also convenient.
Right. Lazy. Right? Right?
Lazy. Yep.
Of every African American thinks the same. Every woman thinks the same.
Because
every
it's not
old
the case.
White man thinks the same. I'm in love with Ben Carson, okay?
He does not think. I knew she was about to say
he
it.
Does not she think like every African American. It just is very, it's demeaning to that entire race and any minority race to think just because of their physical appearance that they somehow intellectually think a certain assigned way. I think that's frankly a disgusting thing to think. And I think she was really good to emphasize that.
What an hour. This was fun. This has been fun. Alexis and Samantha and Celine, all kidding aside, please come back again. But more importantly, thank you for what you're doing. Forget just on this campus. Forget just here. But, you know, beyond this campus to alert your generation that, A, politics is not like, ew, you know, and that the more engaged you are in it and the earlier you are in it, you will be as much of a political junkie at 2019 and 2018?
Yes, sir.
Yep. Oh, my lands. As you are at at not 2019 and 18. How about that? Is that a politically correct answer?
25.
With half-life, yes.
There you go.
Yeah, exactly. With half-life, absolutely.
But what gives me so much encouragement, again, thank you so much. One thing in my field we study over again, history is made by the people who show up.
Yes.
And you guys are being present. You're showing up. I am even more optimistic about this country's future than I have ever been before because of what I've seen today. So I'm real happy.
Indeed.
You guys are so like encouraging and supportive
of
us. But I know that when you guys were our ages, you probably were just as active, if not more. And I feel like you have to be the change that you wish to see. And with us continuing to see great leaders like you on our campus, it only continues to motivate us and allow us to continue to unite and grow more.
Thank you. Yes. Good stuff. So that wraps up Episode 23.
The Jordan years,
exactly.
And Stephen Hawking.
And plus Stephen Hawking. All kidding aside, considering how horrible that man's body destroyed itself, how horribly his body destroyed itself, to see that he had his mind right up to the very end was such a gift for humanity.
By the way, it's interesting to know, when he was first diagnosed with ALS, and this was when he was in his 20s.
Mm-hmm.
They gave him a life expectancy of 3 years.
3 years.
This man lived
50 years later, his body finally gave out. Yeah,
and think about what he contributed to humanity in those 50 years.
Well, he's being remembered in the same breath with guys like Einstein and Newton.
Indeed.
Thank you, Dr. Hawking.
Indeed. All right, that wraps up. Upon further review with the podcast profs, he is Soren Fanning. I am Anthony Moretti. But more importantly, thank you one final time to Alexis and Samantha and Celine. And we will talk to you next week on the Podcast Profs.